Oh, you the voice?
Nah, not me.
So if you're not the voice, who is?
The people, man. The people's the voice.
So what does that make you?
That makes me the middleman. I'm the middleman. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Middleman Podcast. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, and today I am joined by poet Joey Too Cozy. It is a cozy world, and we're just living in it.
How you guys doing this afternoon? I'm so grateful to be on the Middleman Podcast with my great friend, Kevin. So grateful for you having me. I'm just excited to be here, man. I can't wait to answer the questions you have and, you know, just kind of just get cozy with you guys, kind of give you a little bit of me.
Awesome, man. I'm excited to have you here. You know, I've met you in the past. I've actually met you at Self-Privilege Essentials, at pop-up events. And as a matter of fact, I've seen your first performance, okay? Your first ever live performance, right? And what I want to just say about that first performance, right, is you mentioned it was your first performance and I was watching it and I was like, okay, you could tell it was its first performance. You know, you were reading off the phone. You were, you know, taking back some words, you know, starting over again, so on and so forth. And nonetheless, though, you know, it still takes a lot of courage for someone to get up there and perform their art, especially such as poetry, because it's like it's so subjective, you know, all the words and just what you're trying to portray, the message that you're trying to get out through your poetry, you know. So from the first time I saw you, right, then like a year and a half later, I would say, correct?
Correct. About a year.
About a year later, you know, we go back to Self-Privilege Essentials, you know, not knowing to my knowledge that Joey was going to be there. I was there doing stand-up comedy. We spoke about this a couple of times. Shout out to you, Kafar Meyer, as always. You know, thank you so much for having that platform for everyone around. But the second go around, bro, I'm watching you. I'm watching you move. I'm watching you work. And I'm like, yo, I'm like, this man really improved, man. This man really improved. He's hitting the pockets, you know.
I appreciate that. So funny thing about that is, right, the first performance was so, I was so focused on everything else but like me. Like I was helping my brother at mm-hmm. that time with his food and I just wasn't focused on me. So I kind of just, I know I could rhyme words. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna get on there and like wing it. But I didn't understand like crowd and crowd work and like the performance aspect of it. Like you can write words till the cows come home, but really getting on stage and kind of performing your art, it becomes like a different animal. And it's kind of just like a comfort level. So that was kind of what you saw after that year and a half was the comfort of multiple stages. And it's funny to me because I literally was at a mic on Tuesday and like I've gotten so comfortable on stages now where I see other people floundering and I'm like, just like you gotta power through it because like it's one of those best way to learn is to crash and burn. You kind of got to keep finding mics and using that outlet to get that. So, like, shouts out to Self-Privileged Essentials, Kafar Myers. Keep doing your thing, man. Giving us artists a platform to, you know, perform our art and kind of practice that ability to hone a crowd and, you know, crowd work and see what it feels like to be all eyes on you, center of attention. That's, like, it's beautiful. Like, that's a beautiful outlet right there. And I appreciate him because, you know, it was funny. The second show you saw, I didn't even know how I felt about going there. I was like, I knew I like practiced, but I'm like, I know everybody's going to be expecting. And like for you to see it from like a year's perspective, I appreciate you. Like you were one of the first people to come up after the show and was like, yo, I can see the growth. And I appreciate that. Like you're one of those that I could say you've been there from the beginning of the journey where it's like, all right, we going up now. It's only up from here.
100%, man. I just want to, you know, add to what you were saying earlier. You know, I know that you were saying that at that first show, you know, you were focused on anything other than yourself because I know you mentioned it's a personal aspect of your life, but your brother was going through a hardship and, you know, you were just like, I'm just trying to get my brother right before everything goes down, you know. So, you know, with you being able to work through that on top of going on stage in a stressful environment. It's stressful. It's alleviating. It's nerve-wracking. You know what I mean? But you still went up there. You did your thing. And then from then, you just grown and grown and grown. And your second go-around was fantastic. And at that first show, you actually met a gentleman named Monk, Mr. Yes, Melville.
My mentor, Mr. Monk Melville. It was funny because me and him, we always joke about it. We talk a lot, like kind of constantly every day. We hit a lot of shows together. Part of the Party Poets community, well, Party Poets, what is that? We are a Party Poets collective. We are the Party Poets collective. We actually have a show coming up here shortly. But yeah, I met Monk. He went after me And it just the way that he controlled the crowd, where it wasn't like, for me, I feel like when I was saying the words, they were so heavy that it wasn't like, it was heavy and it was bringing the crowd down. And then Monk came on and he just like, whatever he wanted the crowd to feel, they felt. Like, even in my poem, I had some points that weren't supposed to actually feel as down as they were. But because they weren't rehearsed and is like, you know, friendly to me, like, that's what Monk always tells me, like, make friends of your poems. Your poems are your friends. So you got to really know your friends. Like, me and my friends, all the people that I consider friends are good friends to me. Like, and I love them. I cherish them dearly. So that's how he makes me treat my poems. And that's how I, like, you know, read them. And I joke around with my poems. I'm a light-hearted guy. So I'm trying to convey that coziness, but also, like, the uncomfortability, you know, that life kind of has to give you. You got to kind of go through uncomfortable moments to become comfortable in uncomfortable moments. Like, that's how you get cozy.
Baptism by fire, yes. You know, is something that I've heard Monk say multiple times. You know, baptism by fire, you're going to go in there and you're going to struggle with it, but don't worry, because you're going to come out alive and you're going to come out on top, you know. And, you know, you've joined the Party Poets, and, you know, you said that Monk is a mentor. And from knowing him personally, if you do know Mr. Melville, he is one hell of a poet, man. You know, Disney Kid is probably, it's a hitter, you know, it's a hitter.
Hell of a poet is an understatement. Like, and for him, it's fun to see him, like, practice new stuff. Like, because it's like, oh, it shows me that, yeah, there are flaws in the you know, in the process. There are faults and flaws and flops. And not every night is going to be a 12 out of 12. But those nights that are, you got to hit those and you got to feel those. Like, we kind of ride highs now where we go to mics and we just, like, have a blast. And it's like, all right, you want to go rip, like, 7 more mics tonight? And then we just go and we just get our name out there. And, like, people know us. People are kind of tuned into what the Party Poets got going on this year. And, like, that's all it is. Like, it's a process. We kind of know what the vision is, where we want to go with it. And, like, that's the exciting part of it. Like, and I'm seeing a lot of the artists from Self-Privileged Essentials doing their own thing, too. And I appreciate you for giving us this platform to talk. And I've been enjoying watching their stuff. And, like, just following all of these different people that we met. And it's just, like, hearing songs, like, I remember, I forgot whose song it was, but the other day I was on Instagram and I heard the song and I was like, I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard the song. And it's just like it's I'm enjoying becoming fans of artists that are, like, so underground, because I believe that, like, yo, you never know, tomorrow y'all could pop and I could be like, yo, I was there day one.
100%, man. We just got to keep going, because one day it's all going to pop, bro. It's all going to grow in fruition. So let me ask you, you know, I know you rehearse with the crew at the Party Poets, you know, what are those rehearsals like? Where are you guys located when you guys are, you know, running through just new works of art? And, like, what have you learned within your time from being with the Party Poets to now? Like, you were mentioning crowd work, you know, you were mentioning making friends in your poems. What are things that you have self-developed and you're like, wow, like, I was really missing this the first go around, you know, and now you feel like you got it down pack, or you're still developing it?
So first and foremost, I feel like learning myself. I feel like that was the best part about it, where it's like, I've learned that I'm an auditory learner. So, like, I can write my poems a million times, but if I never hear myself repeating those poems. So I learned that through, like, how I memorize, like, J. Cole lyrics and Dreamville lyrics, where it's like, I hear a song twice, like, stick. 2 days after that shit came out, I knew J. Cole's verse, like, the back of my head. And I'm like, funny. That's crazy. So it's like, oh, because I heard it. Like, I hear it. And then it's like, okay, cool. So that's how, like, now I record my shows. And, like, even if it's a flop or not, I just listen to myself, where it's like, I can listen and hear, like, because, like, I realized, like, I think Wale has this one song, and I just hate the way he ends it, because he says, like, it cringes me every time. So, like, when I listen to my own lyrics, I'm, like, that critical, where it's like, you gotta go, like, you gotta be, like, jovial here, or a little bit more serious here, or kind of, like, and then that's another thing, too. The more shows you do, you kind of see what parts of the poems the crowds react to. So, like, I got new poems that I'm working on that, depending on the crowd, you know, I have a lot of different references to Christianity, Greek mythology, and, like, pop culture references. And you kind of just see, like, okay, cool, the crowd kind of gets that one. So, like, the Disney Kid for Monk, where it's like, you play with the crowd, you see, like, okay, did they get that one? Did they get that one? That one went over their head. But it's like, okay, how can I make it hit next time? Slow it down here, speed it up there, you know? and just kind of practicing and playing with the art. Like, I feel like the best part about practicing with the party poets is kind of like honing and realizing like, this is mine. So like, I can do whatever I want with it. These are my words. You can't, like, especially a lot of my poems are so personal to me that if, like, go ahead, if you wanted to copy my poem and go flow for flow, I'd be like, you never experienced that. Like, that wasn't your life. That was literally the life I've lived. So you could tell, like, it's no Ghost Riders. It's all authentic. It's like, you feel it. You just kind of, you feel it. Like, I feel like that's the best, you know, like, learning myself, learning my craft, learning my words, and then, you know, feeling the crowd, practicing, learning what I need to learn, you know, like learning how I learn, all of those things, you know, have led to the artist that you see before you, kind of flourishing and blossoming.
And the authenticity, you know, you mentioned that everything that you write is from a first person. It's personal, you know, it's authentic, you know, and I think that's great, you know, because you're not trying to perceive someone who you're not. You know, and that's essential and that's key. So let me ask you this, you know, why poetry, man? What does poetry provide for you? You know, there's all these types of forms of art to express yourself, but you honed in on poetry. Is there a specific reason and why?
So poetry, funny enough, for like two real reasons. So I remember back in school, I couldn't draw, but I would always like fantasize outside of class. So I would write poems and I would share them with my best friend. Shouts out to Tyrell Peastree. I would share them with him, and obviously he would say they were good. And I'm like, I don't really want yes men on my team. But like over the long haul that me and Tyrell have been through, like I've written a bunch of poems. And like they never really, like, because I just write when I want to escape because I can't draw. So I write. And like all of them I write, like I've written a lot of deployment poetry and all of that stuff.
Excuse me, you mind me interrupting? Deployment poetry?
Yeah, so when I was in the military, I was on a deployment for about...
I didn't know that about
a year
you.
And a half. Yeah, joined the military. I was in the Navy from 2016 to 2020, about that. No, 2021. And yeah, I went on deployment and kind of met like a lot of different people through that avenue. And I would write poetry for them. And they would still agree like, yo, this is good poetry. But I'm like, oh, y'all motherfuckers just don't want me coming in cranky to work tomorrow. So y'all just said your shit was good. So I remember I read The Rose That Grew Through Concrete, Tupac's poetry book. And I was like, yo, Tupac was a better poet than he was like a rapper, in my personal opinion. And because of that, like, I kind of, like, if you ask me Biggie or Tupac, I was born and raised in New York, but I'm going to say Tupac all the time because Tupac was just more authentic in his poetry. But his poetry book came out post-mortem. So it's like, I kind of realized that I was trying too hard in life. And it was like, yo, this is something that I've been good at. Like, my mother started finding all my poetry books when I came back from the Navy. Like, yo, when did you write this? I'm like, oh, that was from 10th grade. She's like, this sounds so mature. And it's like, I kind of recognized that it was something that I was good at, but I'm like, I never could see a way forward with it. So I kind of just took it as like, oh, it's a hobby. It's a pastime. It doesn't really, like, it's just going to be something that I'm always going to do to alleviate a stressful day at work. Not really use it as my work, because now I do it full time and it's not work. It's like, okay, I'm playing with words. I literally play with myself with a pen all the time. Like, so it's kind of, those is what led me to poetry. Like, and I still do want to like dibble and dabble in music, because I do have those like, oh, I hear something and I want to like use it for a beat. Like, and I have Silo Good. He's a part of the Party Poets.
I know that, man.
Yes, I love the way he like the way he loops stuff. So I want him to loop, like, I'm trying to write a Pokemon poem and I just want him to loop like the very best over and over. And like, I'm playing around with concepts and ideas like that, but like, I don't want to hide behind a beat. Like, I want my words to be heard. That's why like my favorite artists are like J. Cole's and Wale's and Kendrick Lamar's, because you got to kind of like pay attention past the beat. Like, they're saying so much more than just the beat. And yeah, you're gonna hear it in the club, but at the end of the day, you know, it's the hey y'all. Like, y'all don't even wanna hear me, y'all just wanna dance.
But yeah,
like, I'm really talking about my life. I'm talking about, so I don't wanna lose myself and my saturation over a beat. You get what I mean? Where it's like, that's why I love poetry. But I do wanna dibble and dabble in other art forms and like music and whatnot, book writing and all of that stuff. So,
you know that one song, Pretty Little Fears?
Yes.
That is probably one of the best Cole verses, in my opinion, bro.
So I remember on deployment, you know how J. Cole had that line where he said, I used to print out Nas raps and put them on my, up on my wall, but it was not the words, it was the pictures I saw. So I remember I took, I think it was Pretty Little Fears. He has a verse off of Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiments album. I think Purple Emoji, like all of his love song verses, and I just put them as like one, like put them as like one song, and I would just read it and it'd be like, this is a perfect love song. Cause it's like, I just like love the authenticity of it, where it's like, yo, you like the flower that I won't let die. Right before your petals start to get out, right before your petals start to will, I choose to give you one last try, fill your vase up with water. And it is like, he just go in, like, you know, I don't know, Kobe Colin.
Yeah, Cole is one of the best, man. And I think it's funny that you bring up that song, Stick. You know, are you talking about the Dreamville song, Stick, yes, right? Yes. Yo, I was just talking to Roy about that song, bro. And I'm not a fan of that song, personally. Yeah. You know, because I went to a concert. I went to the JID concert, bro. A freaking mosh pit formed.
Yeah, that was nuts. That's probably what's going to happen at Dreamville Fest when I go next weekend.
Oh, you're going?
Yes, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Awesome, bro. Good so for you. Those excited. Minutes, those tickets were taken off of the like the shelf ASAP, bro. Like the minute they dropped.
The second they dropped, me and my girlfriend were on them. We were like, yeah, we need those. So we're like excited to go. I swear to God, I'm trying to catch J. Cole, JID, or Boss. One of the three. Anybody. Boss, just because Boss is from actually my neighborhood. He was born and raised in Hollis, Queens. So, you know. Just catch him and be like, hey, man, because I kind of know a couple people that he know, but just like, I'm not going to just be like, yo, let me get $20. I'm be like, yo, listen to my poem.
Mm-hmm.
Say if you like it. Because I know Jid had a lot of poetry. Jid had a poetry verse on his last album. And, you know, Cole called me down to the studio house. Let me lay a little poetry verse on your album. Nah,
2007, yeah.
2007. Not even going to hurt. Not, yeah, like, you know, everybody, poetry don't hurt nobody. So...
That's beautiful, man. You know, you were talking about deployment poetry. I didn't know that you were in the military. That's kudos to you for doing that. You know, thank you for your service. That's one hell of a thing.
Thank you for your support. Thank you for your support.
You mind me asking how old you are? I think we're around the same age, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm 25.
Okay, yeah.
Turned 26 May 28th this year.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's so crazy. With the two different lives that people choose and then how we end up back in the same creative mind space somehow. Yeah, you know?
The funny thing, too, is before like I tried the military, I actually did do HVAC for a little bit.
Oh, no
for
shit.
For like a little second. And then it was just like,
It sucks.
It was not my thing. Because like my friend was big into HVAC because his dad was into it. And like that was how he got put into it. But he got put in through like an apprenticeship.
Mm.
So I was gonna have to go through the school and then learn. And I was like, I like working smarter, not harder. That's what my mother likes to say. So that's why I write poetry.
You said you're an audible learner. I'm a doer. I'm a physical learner. Mm-hmm. That's why HVAC translated with me pretty well, was because I was able to understand working my hands, you know, building the Legos. I just like using my hands to do stuff. You know what I mean?
I do know what that means. I know what you mean with that.
I think audible listening would probably be my second way of learning, because I do find myself, bro, you can ask my friends, you can ask Michael, Charlie, everyone, they get annoyed because I always have music playing.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I like to listen to music, even if it's just a beat. You know, I don't, like, we just had beats going on here before. That's how I like to calm down, you know, just listen to some beats and just relax.
I'm completely the opposite. Like, everybody's like, oh, you should, like, everybody tells me, you know, if you want to write music, you got to kind of listen to a beat while you write. And I'm like, I need like absolute silence to write. Like, unless it's like my teacher drowning out Pythagorean theorem bullshit in the back and then I could drown. That's white noise to me. Like, what? Education is white noise to me. Like, what? What is that? Yeah, no. Yeah. Elementary school, high school, middle school, all of that. White noise. It was beautiful. History. Ooh, didn't give a fuck about that. Some of my greatest hits come from Miss Jarrett talking in the background. Shouts out to you, Miss Jarrett.
That's funny, man. So listen, I was looking through your Instagram, right? I was looking through your poetry page, and the first post that you ever... Shout out to Joey2Cozy Poetry on Instagram. Okay, mm-hmm, so please make sure you check him out. But the first post that you put up, bro, was a collage and a barrage of notebooks.
Yeah.
And the second slide was notes within your phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you were like... hoping for the hidden gem within the work, you know, and that right there was such an immaculate amount of notes and paper and books and so on. And I'm like, yo, how that's probably been like years and years of you working, correct?
Yes. So that's like I was saying, when I came back from the military, my mother would find a lot of my older notebooks, like my high school notebooks. I actually wrote a complete book, like story, in church one year, like, and I found it, but it was like, I forgot about it because it was like, oh, there was just something, like I was in church, so it was like just something I was doing to pass time because we would go to church from sun up to sundown where it was like second service, middle service. So I would like write my stories to escape. And yeah, like my mother's just been finding all my old poems. And it's funny because like I would love to be able to just like write in my notes all my poems. Like I swear to God, if my house burned down today, the only thing I would try and grab is all of my notebooks because I feel like those are like gems. Where I think Frank Ocean had a, he was talking to, like he wrote a letter to himself, to his younger self. And he was like, yeah, that notebook you, or that book bag you carry with like your hard drive. Yeah, that shit is going to make you $1 million one day. Don't lose that. Like treat it the same way you treat it. Like treat it like it's gold. Mm-hmm. So that's how I treat all my notebooks. Cause I'm like, some of the stuff that I wrote doesn't even resonate with me anymore, but I read it to certain people and it's like, yo, like I didn't even know that. Like why, like, and it's just kind of, you never really know because I write from where I'm at. And it's like, obviously I'm growing and evolving. So sometimes it's nice to go back to those writings and see how much I've grown or like how far I've come along. And then other times it's like, you know, I do feel like this, but like, how do I? So now I write more intentionally where it's like, okay, what would the lesson be in all of this pain that I go through? So it's kind of like, even though I used to write so much, it's so much more I'm learning about writing and about being a poet and like different poetic styles and cadences. And like, it's just fun. It's just like fun, like going from pen and paper to like now in front of a mic and like actually conveying my message. And it's like, okay, who am I actually speaking to right here? And how do I want to get this message to them? Or like, like, what's the purpose? That's what I'm really learning now, like, to be intentional and purposeful. So when I write, like, some most of my poetry is for me, but it's to convey me beyond what you see. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I walk into a room, 6'2", tall, dark, handsome, but, you know, it goes into a lot to look like this. Like, it doesn't, like, it's just not a diamond. It's a lot of pressure and cold and pain and hurt. It's a lot. So that's what I try to convey through my work. But I try to make it as beautiful as possible so everybody could digest it in a very, you know, enjoyable manner.
Yeah, man, you make people feel good. I'll tell you that much. You do. You know, when you and I were talking about booking this podcast, Richie said to me, yo, what's up, Kev? You handsome motherfucker. What's good, bro? And I was like, thank you. You know, thank you. I feel no, good, bro.
I believe I that good. It doesn't cost anybody anything to show love. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't diminish who I am by telling you you're a handsome young man. Thank my you. My brother over there is a handsome young man. And we could all be handsome young men, you know? Everybody can be happy, you know? And that's another thing I'm learning where it doesn't take a lot to make certain people happy. Like, certain people think that, you know, you need $1 million or all of this, you know, flashy gold. But you ask certain people, like I know my mother just told me a story, how she just had a conversation with a homeless person like years ago on the train, and like she specifically asked the person, what do you need? And it's like, I need a hug. But everybody would have thought to give this man money or like food. He's just like, I need a hug. But like my mother's like, yo, the way he smelled, she could tell nobody touched him in a while. But he specifically asked for a hug. So it's like, you know, I'm not gonna be like one of those persons to give somebody specifically what they want, but you know, I'm gonna give what I can. Which I have my words, which I have positivity, you know? Mm-hmm. Like my smile, I learned from my mother. That's who I get my smile from. Like she doesn't hesitate to show it. And I find it weird sometimes where it's like, yo, you're in a supermarket just smiling. Like that shit is weird. But it's like, it's so radiating and radiant where it's like, if my mother's smiling, you don't really have a choice but to smile if you're in her presence. So like, I realize that I have that gift too. And I have no choice but to like show it and share it because like everybody's gonna look at me like, oh, what is he gonna do? What is he gonna do? So I'm gonna smile and be positive, you know? Especially like, you know, black men in America, how the stigma is that, you know, we're like the worst thing since sliced bread, you know? I have to kind of be that liaison. Like they said in the military, you're a sailor 24/7. So like, if anything was to happen when I was in California, it'd be like US Navy sailor does this, right? Mm. So if anything happens with me, it's, you know, former U.S. sailor or da-da-da. So I have to be that liaison where it's like, people are going to test me and you just smile. It don't hurt to show love, you know? And my mother was just telling me, it's not worth it being right sometimes.
Okay.
It's not worth it being like to argue with certain people. You got it. You got it. Like you could deflect so many situations by just, you right.
That's because
then, you know, what are you going to do if I give you that you're right? If you continue going, then now you're just looking for problems. So, you 100%. Know.
It sounds like your mother is a big influence into your life, my friend.
Yes, yes. Okay. Philosophically, that is my queen.
That's beautiful, man. I see you have a book over here. You know, mm-hmm. We're definitely going to tap into that later. Shout out to your stickers, by the way. Shout out to your stickers. We just got two stickers up here from Joey Too Cozy. Chill pill. I like that. Chill pill. Just take one dose of a chill pill to chillax, you know? And then what's that second one? Just rock on?
Yep.
Rock on, man. Thank you for the stickers. I appreciate it, man.
Sounds anything like for you. Business. Anything for you.
Appreciate it. You know, I want to backpack off of something that you said earlier with, you know, money. You know, money. Like, what do you need in life? You know, and a lot of people are like, money. I remember I was watching this one video, and it was like, they were two contestants on a TV show, okay? And they were talking, and they were like, oh, if I gave you $1 million, what would you say? And they were like, oh, yeah, I'll take it right now, 100%. But what if I told you can't live tomorrow? Would you still take that $1 million? Mm-hmm. And immediately, bro, you know, that's mm-hmm. It's just everyone turns and they're like, nah, on second thought, I'm good.
Yeah, that you money know? Don't matter. That money don't matter if you don't wake up in the morning. And like me, I'm learning, like, as I get money, it's like easier to just be like, okay, give it to the people that need it more than me. I don't really give a fuck about it. Like, I care about money. I would like money. Money makes, you know, money makes life easier in certain sentiments. And like for me personally, I'm big on family, so money would make my family's life 10 times easier. But money for me would like be liberation, where it's like, yo, money, I would take my nieces and nephews all over the world, like places that I want to visit that I haven't visited, places that I have visited. Like, I've never been shy to travel outside of the country. Like, I've always had a passport. Mm. My family's always, like my dad and my mom, some years I would have two family vacations, so... Like, I know about, you know, and I feel like my father feels like he raised me well in the fact that we was having a conversation about last year. And I told him that at the end of the day, during Christmas, as I started getting older and my nieces and nephews started coming into the picture, I really didn't care about receiving gifts anymore, because as I got older, my nieces and nephews, they came and started taking my gifts. I'm the youngest. So I was getting all of the gifts from my older siblings, but as they started getting kids, their kids started getting their gifts. But I realized that it never mattered about not getting a gift. It was always about spending time with my family during Christmas. So my pops heard me say that and he was like, yo, what? And I'm like, yeah, like I was listening. I was paying attention. Like, family matters, because at the end of the day, those are the people that kind of, they don't have to love you, because I do have some family members that, you know, I understand why they have a estranged relationship. But if push comes to shove, backs against the wall, those are the people that you could call. Especially today, where it's like a lot of people got 1,000,001 followers on social media, but don't have friends. Like, a lot of people have those followers, but it's like, if you needed $20 right now, who could you really call?
Yeah.
Like, if someone had a gun to your head, phone call, you got one phone call, who do you have to call? You're going to call your mom, right? Someone that you know is going to answer. So, you know, that's the people that, like my mother always says, the people that cross puddles for me, I'll cross rivers for them, because those are the people that, you know, when push comes to shove, they got your back. They got your back.
I love that, man. That's a good, great way to put it there, man. You know, so you have some poetry here. Do you want to tap into anything right now? You know, because we could definitely, you know, span them out through span the questions in between 100%. You know, thank you for Joey coming here to the Middleman Podcast. He's going to perform some poetry for us. You know, you are, I believe, the third or fourth poet to come on the podcast. You know, so I'm very intrigued to hear what you got for us, man.
Nah, I got some. I got a lot of untitled, unmastered stuff. I really do not title my poetry, but actually, don't get stuck chasing rubies, pearls, and diamonds in this lifetime and lose your heart's gold nor soul silver in a Pokemon battlefield world. Give your graces and his royalties to the victor. Blast off, but be sure to be back. For abyssic thoughts, dark rod black, we wear life's gimmicks, mega evolutions, growing grind every day. So that's kind of, that's just, I'm playing around with Pokemon.
I hear it. Yeah, I hear it. Evolution, love, blast off. I hear it.
I love Pokemon. That is my shit.
What's your favorite Pokemon? You gotta have one. Right? All right, if we gotta choose from the three starter packs, okay?
All right, wait. The
Squirtle, Charizard, Bulbasaur.
I'm gonna probably go Charizard with that one. I feel like the way society has leaned was that they forced you to like Charizard. But like, I play Pokemon Unite, and Charizard is kind of whacking that shit. I be playing Venusaur. That's my main in Pokemon Unite. Pokemon Unite, by the way, is a Switch game. It's an online game. If anybody want to download it out there when you see this podcast, add me. It's at Joey2Cozy. I do play that very often. But yeah, they just added a couple of new Pokemon. I'm a big dragon type Pokemon guy. I like the way like now they're like adding like, oh, they got dragon and ghost types, dragon and them, and it's like, oh, they getting nasty with them. Like obviously the classic Dragonite.
Dragonite, he's a beast.
But they just added Goodra to Pokemon Unite, and they got Dragapult. That's a dragon ghost, and like he's just the best.
You know what's funny is that you're saying that you're a dragon type Pokemon. You know Pokemon Go, obviously.
Yeah, that's so, my shit too.
On Pokemon Go, my Pokemon collection, I decided to make myself a dragon trainer. So I was like, yo, any dragons that I don't have, like, get them to me. Because I was just trying to get these dragons. So I think this is pretty cool how it's just correlating like that.
I gotta re-download my Pokemon Go, actually. I do need to do that. But, ooh, actually, I got a little one right here. Maybe I'm insane and all these little scribbles confirm it. Like all my jumbled thoughts, more labyrinth than cohesive. Maybe it's the madness not accepted till after. Like how they only love you after your jersey goes into the rafters. From fixation to spectacle, from face to fashion states. Not who'll let me is who'll stop me. Turns out our insanity is what separates you from me. From fish from monkey. I wasn't put on this planet Earth to climb your corrupt corporate tree. So please pause pollution. On the hood, I consider lively. My mind and ocean, feel free to explore me. Just don't Shamu, leave me to swim freely. How? And give me, and when I'm gone, remember me fondly.
I like that. Here, I got one that I would see if you wanted to perform. I was going to save it for later, but it was one of the posts that you have on Instagram, and you just titled it Push Through Poem. I actually took a screenshot of it. So here you go. I have a screenshot of it so you can read it verbatim.
I think I wrote this one when I was in Guyana. Yeah. Pushing and pushing like I'm about to give birth, because one guarantee about this life is no matter what, it'll hurt. The tough words to say that are sometimes knotted in your chest, the nights where your thoughts are the reason you're unable to rest. The trust betrayed and emotions displayed, the ones you thought your soulmates, your reason turned out to be summer, just another season. The drugs and alcohol you used in attempt to numb, but this life's shit is always got you under thumb. The loss, the pain, regret and disdain, the hate and the hurt, questioning what it's all worth. In the minimal moments of joy and relief, actually worth the pain and deceit. Sadly, the good nights never stay, nor rarely do the last like the bad. Nights where you lay in bed and remember lovers you've had. You lay there and wonder how you've got where you are, reminiscing and remembering you still got to go so far. But pushing and pushing through the pain nonetheless, fighting and clawing, to the last stump in your chest. The last day you live, no matter when it is, you're pushing and pushing, hoping the release of death is worth the strain of the life you've lived. Hopefully you're forgiven for all the sins you did. Joey2Cozy poetry. Actually, I forgot about that one.
I love the ending of that. You know, I'm going to just read that again here at the end here. You know, one my favorite part is right here. Fighting and clawing to the last stump in your chest. The last day that you live, no matter when it is, you're pushing and pushing, hoping the release of death is worth the strain in the life that you've lived. Hopefully you're forgiven for all the sins you did, bro. And that right there, man, was a very powerful poem. Do you remember where you were at when you were actually when you were writing that?
That might have been, that was probably, you know how a lot of artists, I feel like I kind of don't like when everybody says that artists sacrificed a family member to gain fame and acclaim, because I understand the push of pain, especially if I was to write a pained poem, it'd probably be the best poem ever. And I feel like that one, I was dealing with a breakup, and I was kind of just dealing with a lot of shit. So I was kind of coming back home, and that was kind of one of those where I was kind of rebuilding myself. So it's kind of like giving myself life mantras. And I feel like a mantra that I got from that one was like, every day I wake up, I'm gonna make it everybody else's problem. But not really like problem. Like every day I wake up, it's like, okay, I'm gonna be thankful and I'm gonna kind of just push, where it's like if I gave up today and tomorrow was the day that I made it big, like, what would have been the point if all of the, you know, all of the pain? So it's kind of one of those things that kind of, and then that's what I've realized a lot in this art. As I go to more mics and whatnot, you realize, like, everybody feels pain. Like, everybody has that hurt. But it's like, I've seen so many people make it so beautiful. So why can't I? So it's like, and that was one of those where it's like, everything hurts. So you got to push, because the best things, like a baby, comes after the pain. So. Mm-hmm.
No, I love it, man, because it was like full circle. You know, you started off with the pushing. It's like you were born into life. Now you just got to push through all the struggles and you know, you just keep pushing through life. You got all these things that keep hitting you. You know, life is never easy, not a single day. You know, we're always figuring out. I'm always figuring out. And sometimes I'm tired of being that man to figure it out.
And tell me about it. I remember one time I literally got into an argument with my mom. And I was like, yeah, I didn't ask to be born. And she was like, neither did I. And I was like, you got it. Because I was like, yo, my grandmother's dead and I'm not going to go argue with her. But it's like, you know, nobody kind of asks to be here. It's not our real responsibility. But, you know, I kind of have realized, because I feel like a lot of people kind of go through a stage after like 18 where it's like your life has kind of been accolades. You're going through high school and whatnot. And then you graduate and it's like, okay, figure it out. You don't really get no kudos for anything you do. You're just supposed to do it. You're an adult. And it's like, I'm 25 and I kind of realized like I'm like new to adulting. Like I'm a baby adult.
Agreed.
So it's one of those like you kind of just got to figure it out. But it's like for me, I realized that my nieces and nephews, they're kind of watching me and like they've been watching me even when I didn't realize it. So like. One of my friends, Jedi Rose, said,
Shout out Jedi.
He said, you're useless if you're not your best you. Cause he has like his kids that you just gotta get up and fucking do some shit. Like do something. Like that's kind of what I've realized. Like as I've been down is do something. Like nothing happens if you're in your house. Like go out, take a walk, go just be outside, do something. You gotta kind of figure it out, you know? And then as you are active and move, things kind of fall into place. Like you kind of realize your passion. Like for me, poetry was kind of just, my brother was like, yo, you going to just write these words in your room all day? Or you going to go say them? Like my brother was like, yo, cause my brother's a big female fanatic. So he was like, yo, females love that poetry shit, son. You could like, you over here crying about a bitch. You writing all these poems about a bitch. Go read your poem about the bitch for new bitches and get new bitches. I'm like, yo, that's not the point of this. I'm hurt, but I'm going to read this poem. I'm going to read it.
Have you ever been on stage and, you know, became overcame with emotion while reading a poem?
Actually not yet, but I know today is coming. Cause I've been practicing this one and I've performed it a lot and I've fought back the tears. I feel like I don't want to cry in public. I feel like people that record themselves and cry on social media, like I cry in my room. I'm a man. That's what I'm supposed to do. But if I were to have to cry, I wouldn't like shy away from it because I feel feelings and like, especially the poems that I write, I kind of try to convey like the most amount of emotion with the least amount of words. And then specifically for me, my poems is kind of inside jokes for me. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm reading it to someone out there, they wouldn't even understand why I would start crying. But I feel like I only have like one poem in my Serato right now that I would cry to. But, you know, as they kind of go, because I feel like I haven't really tapped into that like real sad boy. But it's like, because I'm trying to figure out how to like tiptoe it beautifuler. Mm-hmm. Like make it more pretty, dress it up a little bit better.
Make it a friend.
Yeah, make it more friendly.
Gotcha.
Make it more presentable.
So when do you find yourself most inspired to be writing poems? You know, is there like a certain thing that just it's just a reoccurring event and you're like, damn, son, why am I always writing after this happens? Does that ever happen to you?
So I feel like for me, it's kind of just the beauty of life. So I realized I write a lot like when I'm in New York, because I am in New York now more often, but it's different as I'm like becoming more of a poet. 9 times out of 10, I'm in the city and I'm just like traversing the city where it's like, I really don't have anywhere specifically to be. I'm just kind of enjoying the beauty of the city. And New York City is one of the most beautiful cities ever. But 9 times out of 10, like I was born and raised there. So anytime I was getting on a bus or a train, I was going somewhere specific, and I had a time to be there, and I had a time I was going to go back home. And by the time everything is done, I'm done with the day and I'm tired. So, but you know, now when I wake up at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm like, oh, let me go to the Barnes and Noble, the biggest Barnes and Noble, and get lost in the city for a day. So you kind of, like, I write a lot on the train. I remember I wrote some philosophical thought where the thought is that to humanize people, where, like, you know, racists that don't, you know, believe that black people are black people, or all the police brutality that happens, you know, to humanize a person, if you look at every person in the world, everybody has two things in common. We all feel pain and someone loves us. And, like, I feel like if a cop is just like stopping a child where it's like, oh, your mother still loves you. And, like, if I put my knee on your neck, you're going to feel this pain. Like, I could look on the train and I'm seeing, especially in New York City, a million different people. But I'm like, yo, you could be going home and you probably ain't talked to your mother in like 2 months, but guarantee if you called her, she'd still love you. Old, black, white, you know, even homeless people, like, someone loves them, you know? And that's kind of one of those sad things where it's like, you never know what put a person in that position. So that's where I kind of, like, I'm grateful for my position. And, you know, I'm sympathetic with everybody. Everybody has a story where it's like, you can't just look at somebody and believe like, oh, you're like, everything is good. Where it's like, nah, come, tell me your pain. Whereas I'm one of those people where it's like, I look this good, but I know there's pain behind everybody looking good. So I'm one of those people that I want, like, I'm not one of those good friends. I'm one of those friends, yo, come dump your shit on me and then tell me about your shit. I'm going to make you laugh a little bit and then go about your fucking life, because now I need to recharge.
No, you're right, because, it, you know, more often than not, we just had Damian Bailey Fitness over here last week, you know, and we were talking about the gym is therapy to people, man. You got to understand that most people who go to the gym that, you know, are pushing themselves to look as best as they can, they're doing that for a reason, and it's because they're probably depressed about something. Ooh. You know, so to alleviate that depression, they go to the gym, they work out, they feel good about themselves. But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily okay, because they're still battling with those demons, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I've lost 20 pounds within the last, you know, few months, you know.
Congratulations.
So thank you. You know, we're out here. But it's because I was feeling down. When I go to the gym, bro, I feel great. You know, I'm not worried about anything. I'm unplugged, you know.
It goes back to what I was saying, is just do something where it's like, and then I feel like that's what a lot of people, and I feel like the gym to me, like in high school, you know, you got an allotted hour every day that you go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I mean, the girls really just kind of walked in bullshit. I know the guys was in there playing game 7 basketball every fucking day. But, like, you know, once your adult life starts, you know, everything hustle and bustle. And then it's just like, okay, cool. I'm working. I'm tired. I'm going home. I'm going to sleep. That's why everybody that goes to college gets that freshman 15. And then they're curious why so much depression going on. And it's like, yo, you're not encouraging them to work out. And then it's not even working out, but it's like, encourage them to be social. Like, you know, there's multiple ways to be social nowadays where you don't really have to be outside. You can be social in your room, but, like, to be isolated in such a connected world is a danger in and of itself, and to not have an outlet. Like, the gym, for me specifically, I look at gym bros, like, the big motherfuckers, I'm like, oh, you want a fucking hug? Because I'm like, yo, you motherfucker, like, yo, especially those motherfuckers, I'm like, yo, you the biggest motherfucker in every room that you go to, so, like, people are intimidated by you.
Yeah.
But, like, I see that you're just, like, the same person that would have been, you know, just crying a couple of days ago. That's probably what made you start going to the gym. So, you know, you probably just wanted a hug, and all you had to do was lift weights. And now you're getting a type of physical attention that you were striving for. And, you know, fuck it. I don't got to give you no pussy. I'll give you a hug. And it's the same shit. It's the same 6 and 4, as my father would say.
100%, 100%. Ready? So this was the question that I posed, that my buddy posed, and I thought it was a fantastic question.
Okay,
I'm ready
excited
for this
one, yeah.
Okay. What is your form of poetic justice?
What is my form of poetic justice?
Kendrick reference, of course.
I think I got to ask a couple follow-up questions.
Go ahead,
correctly understand. So, because I want to answer the question and say, my form of poetic justice is, like, completely removing myself from someone's life. Where it's like, I know my worth and I know how, like, much I mean to people. So, like, people are going to people, but that's not supposed to stop me from being who I am. I was actually talking to my friend about this last night. Like, everybody's going to be, so I'm one of the people that my first thing is I want to be understanding. So, because if I understand someone, then whatever they do is going to be their character. Like, because I'm not going to agree with everybody. That's why we're like put on this earth, like to have mm-hmm. different opinions and educate me if my opinion isn't the correct one. But, you know, if you understand the person, like I understand one of my aunts, she pretty much raised my mother and her siblings and she's miserable, but I love her. No matter how miserable she is, I know why she's miserable. She was a child raising children.
Yeah.
She should have never been put in that position. So when I see her, I'm like, yo, hi, auntie. She's like, you still got that shit in your nose? And I'm like, I love you too, miserable. And it's like, because I understand her. I don't got to agree with her. I'm not sitting with her for every day. But it's like, yo, the times that I do see, I could be cordial. So I kind of realized the worth of who I am as a person in people's life. So my poetic justice would be removal of myself, where I always tell people my life is a revolving door, but the day that my shit closed and it's locked, whatever side you on, that's the side you got to stay on. Mm. And so it's like, yo, you could come in, you could go out, you could come in, you could go out, but there's going to be a day that that door locks and you hope that you're on the right side. So.
Well said, man. I love that. I love that. Way to answer that question. You know? I
appreciate that question. That was a good ass question. Shouts out to whoever gave you that question.
Mr. Matos, you know, manager of the podcast, mm. you know, big help in the podcast. Always shout out to him and our crew here, you know, Nezzo and Michael behind the camera. We're doing it and we're hitting it hard always.
Big shout out to Nezzo.
Yeah, Nezzo's the guy.
Nezzo is the guy.
He actually wanted me to tell you hello.
Actually, I have to talk to Nezzo. Nezzo owes me an album.
Okay.
Yeah, me and Nezzo. Nezzo was actually one of the first people I rapped with. Nezzo has a track for me that's supposed to be mastered and mixed right now. But I got a lot of stuff for Nezzo. But Nezzo's been Nezzoing. So, you know, creative genius. You got to like, you got to let people. Because I'm one of those people, like, if you hit me up today and I don't respond, like, don't get mad at me. Mm-hmm. Like, check and see if I'm okay. Don't fucking, oh, this motherfucker ain't text me. Bitch, life. Bitch, life. Like, that was one of my things. My cousin, shout out to my cousin, Till Death. Big Till Death. Shouts out to Josh. But when I graduated high school, he told me, like, people aren't being fake if they're not spending every day with you. You used to spend 8 hours a day with these people and, like, they're trying to go to school. Like, I got friends that are doctors right now. I got a friend that's a journalist. Like, people been lifing. I got one of my friends, she's been in multiple car accidents. But it's like,
wow,
you know, yeah, but it's like, I can't be mad at her for not hitting me up or responding. Or I'm like, oh, you're seeing my story, but you're not hitting me up. Where it's like, my life is not that important to her life right now, where she needs me to reach out and be like, yo, are you okay? Yeah. Like, how you been? You need anything from me? Where it's like, you know, it's easy to show love. It don't cost nothing to show some love. You know, kind of put yourself in somebody else's shoes for a second. Because mm-hmm. you kind of probably got it better than them. And you don't know what they need right now. You don't never know what someone really needs right now.
Show love to the people always, you know. I've said it before, I'll say it again, man. There's a lot of love to give, and I don't think that there's enough giving out. You know what I mean? So, yeah, let's go ahead and dive into some more poetry here, man. We've got about a few more minutes here.
Ooh. My throat is crazy.
Todo Sabian, let him get a water. Let him get a sip. Shout out to Kafar Myers, his book right here, Soulful of Me. This is volume one over here. Him and I, you know, we spoke about this book when he came around on the podcast. You know, he's got an immaculate, you know, selection of poems in there.
Yeah, big shouts out to Kafar. Kafar is a great artist and great man. Like, just like one of those people. Like, you know, he's the reason why we connected, and I appreciate him for, you know, putting on that platform that he gives us. This one is titled, actually, funny one, I Might Be More Aggressive Than Goldilocks. Okay. So this one is funny because I had dyed my hair gold at one point, so technically I had gold locks, and I was like, you know what, Goldilocks but with dreadlocks. Don't worry why this story ends with a cop stop and missed a lock shot. But I walked in and waited for the bears there, said fuck the porridge in bed, and went full feral on the bears. Left with a mink and some meat and bear rugs and two bear chairs. Of course, during the onslaught, there were bear blood and bear tears. Normally, a crime like this would be overlooked maybe a few years. But what a black man can do with his bare hands is what America truly fears, and why the story ends there. Yeah,
I like that. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. Before you get into another poem here, mm-hmm. I know you and I mentioned you possibly creating a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So my first book I've been trying to get it out for a while now. I wanted it out for my nephew's birthday last year. I had it finished and typed up, and then I needed a cover, and then I needed publishing. So right now the first copy should be should be in my hand by my next feature show, which is April 13th. And I'm kind of just excited to like read from it and then get more copies and then kind of at my shows sell them, because I feel like my favorite poem that I've ever written in there, well, favorite poem that I've ever written is in there, and that's the one that I perform. And that's, and I feel like the book is mainly for my brother and my nephew, where it's like, you know, not even just them, but just black men in general in America, where it's like, yo, life is going to test us specifically and give us different obstacles. And it's not like the labels that life puts on you. It's kind of your mind and what you can do, where it's like, you know, if you was to look at my brother, you would say a whole bunch of negative words, but I'm like heavy on speaking life into people. So it's like, I don't see my nephews as hyper, and you know, I see them as creative, and they don't need to be boxed in. They don't need to sit down in chairs and follow anybody's rules, because, you know, richer people's children have the opportunities afforded to them to explore different opportunities, where it's like, oh, maybe they're musically inclined rather than need to know about fucking history that by the time they're 22 is going to be debunked and falsified anyway. So, you know,
to backpack on that thought, I had a conversation. I can't remember who said it, but I know they said that the richer people, you know, life is like a dartboard, right? Mm-hmm. The richer people, you know, they have unlimited shots that they could take out to that dartboard. You know, the middle class, you know, I consider myself middle class, you know, we have one shot. And you got to just keep going, you know. It's going to stick eventually, but you have that one shot, and once you miss that one shot, that's it, you're done. But the lower class, the lower income,
they don't even get a shot.
They have no shot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's tough.
That's a way I just think about life, you know, and what you were saying there, you know. So what is the title of that book that you're going to release?
So it's titled A Wondrous Wren Reined, Caged, and Forced to Sing. So it's like, it's kind of a play on my older siblings' names, where it's Warren, Wendella, and Wayne. So it's a wondrous wren, reined, caged, and forced to sing. And then, you know, it's kind of talking about my brother's situation, where it's like, yo, he's just, like, he was an adventurer. My brother's more of an entrepreneur than anybody knows, but it's like, you know, the 50 Cents and the Jay-Z's, they get out of that life where it's, okay, now we, like, took this money from this hustle and we figured out a different way to kind of clean up the money. My brother got trapped in the hustle, but that was what we were raised around and the opportunities afforded to him. Where it's like, I tell people all the time, you know, leaving the hood was the best thing that ever happened to me. They always say that shit, but when I went to the military, I was forced to live in Florida for a year. So I had to get my license. So I have my license. That's a, you know, a liberty that I'm grateful for, because now I drive, I have that liberty to go anywhere. And then I lived in California, and it's just like, you know, that exploration of the world, where it's like, all I knew was the Hollis blocks until I didn't know the Hollis blocks anymore. And then now I'm visiting the hood, and you know, everybody's like, yo, you look different. You like, and I'm like, yeah, this is normal in Cali, but I guess I'm a weirdo out here.
Yeah, you became West Coast bound, and now it's different.
Yeah, Tupac is flowing through me.
I hear they live slower out there, you know?
They do not park very tight. That was what used to frustrate me a lot, because I'm like, yo, if this son of a bitch would just move in, I would have a spot. And then they always trying to get you a ticket in traffic. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you just kind of find, you got to kind of find the beauty in life, where it's like, obviously you're sitting in traffic and you don't want to be in traffic, but you know, there's a sunset. It's still a California sunset. It might be a shitty traffic California sunset, but it's a California sunset nonetheless.
100%, 100%, you know. Would you mind performing that favorite poem from that book?
Favorite poem from that book. Actually, I do not have a problem with that. Okay. This is titled Selfish. And it was written specifically the first night you saw me, actually. The first night that I performed and I bombed, me and my brother kind of got into an argument after the night. And he was like, yo, you so fucking selfish. And I was specifically pissed because I was dedicating all of my time rather than practicing my poetry to helping this motherfucker cook his food. And he called me selfish. So I wrote this poem. Brothers be selfish, and that's okay. I pray to Jah, Mr. Watch Your Head himself, every day. Raised round lions, tigers, fresh from the grisliest of dens. Grateful we not dead. Though gun charges have changed your perspectives and trajectories. Now that you're going, a bottle of butter brown jungle juice is all I'm left with. But it's okay. You call me selfish. Only because my pain matters to me. Going 25 for 28. almost a 30 for 30. Jameis too cozy, effortlessly. Wilt's 100 without shooting a three because I'm coming down life's lane and they stay following me. Like you never even shot Ailey's. Fight him, listen to me. Fight him, listen to me, please. Though I know I could stop, I could talk for 24/7, 366, and you couldn't comprehend me. These are the reasons why sometimes I'm selective with my energy. Like the things I want to ask you for, you keep taking you away from me. And that's that shit that drives me crazy. Live a better life and love me how I'd love me. Selfish.
Selfish. Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate
for
the platform. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I like talking about my poetry. It's
dude,
fun.
How about that, man? That was fast, man. That was a fast hour, if you ask me, man.
Honestly, that shit was not long enough.
And that was a lot of free flow here, man. I kind of just said screw the notes here, and we just free flowed it. So that's
always nice.
I always love being able to do that with a guest. But before we get off the air here, man, I like to give the floor to my guests. You know, any positive messages that you want to share? Anything up and coming shows? You know, where people can follow you, you know, and just check out your poetry. You know, this is the time to go ahead and shout everything out. The floor is yours.
This is Joey Too Cozy, Nicholas Anthony Avery Joseph. Got a lot of shows coming up this month. I'm trying to do a lot of different things. Books should be coming out by April 13th. Books should be in hand by April 13th. We've got stickers coming with my logo options, t-shirts coming with those logo options. I'm a big sticker guy, so we're trying to get like a pack where it's like a platinum pack where you get everything, but mostly it's going to be at shows. We do the Keystone Stage every Thursday, the Party Poets LLC, that's us, we host that. The 29th coming up this week, we have a big the V-Spot Bar poetry night that we're trying to do, that we're trying to sell out, so we can hopefully make that a monthly thing, just kind of getting the venues and the positions and places to people to do their poetry, you know, perform our poetry, because we practice a lot. So Party Poets, shouts out to Rachel, Silo Good, Monk, and One Console, all of those great artists and souls. I can't even call them poets. They're artists. They're just like beasts. All of them do something different. I just write words and rhyme them. But yeah, man, like I appreciate the platform. Appreciate the Middleman Podcast. Shouts out to Self Privilege Essentials, Kafar. Shouts out to Summer Knight. I know he was on the show. Shouts out to
Fame.
Yeah, I don't want to miss nobody. I don't want to get called out, but shouts
Fame
out to
Fame or Arts.
Aura Arts. I love her style. Oh my God. All of those guys. I'm so grateful that I've met you guys on this, you know, journey. I'm so grateful for this platform. This is kind of like, I'm looking at this at this point and it's like, I find it funny where it's like, in a year from now, motherfuckers is not going to have the time to do this podcast. But like the podcast is going to be so booked with so many famous people. And it's going to be like, yo, I'm doing Coachella this weekend. And it's like everybody's going to be doing something great. And I can see it. And I'm so like grateful that I'm like seeing it now where it's like, I'm glad that I'm catching the big bang before it happens. And I'm like enjoying seeing everybody like develop their art and like build it and, you know, learn and Kasim, shout out to Kasim. We need him back in the studio ASAP. Yeah, man, like all of those guys. Great artists, man.
Hey, man, you know, you were saying that you just put, you know, words on paper and you know how to rhyme from time to time. You're a beast yourself, man. You are a beast yourself.
I appreciate that.
Like I said, you've improved greatly, you know, and I could tell that you are extremely passionate about this. I'm happy to be catching you before your big bang, you know, seriously, because this is what it's all about. You know, I'm just catching people before the big bang. Eventually, we're all going to be booming. Business is going to be booming.
Can't wait for business to be booming.
Now, before we get off the podcast, please show off your bottle right here with all the stickers. Show the people what you're referring to. He's a big sticker guy.
Yeah, big sticker guys. So actually I could go through all of these stickers. You know, we got a trash can for people's unsolicited opinions. It says speak the truth even if your voice shakes. I'm a big truth guy. I got a little fishy because I drink water, and then my Blastoise, Mega Blastoise, of course. We got some lavender here. Shouts out to my people that love plants. Grow through what you go through. I'm a big Gravity Falls fan. That was one of the things that I watched during the pandemic. And it was a great show. It was perfectly ended too. I'm a big Greek philosophy guy. So we got Medusa here. I want to get to the pyramids one day. Egypt. Yeah, man, good vibes, you know, sunshine for a cloudy day, you know. Drink your water. Make sure you drink your water. Drink your water, mind your business. There's nothing bad about water. Water, you can never drink too much water.
I agree. And with that being said, everyone, my name is Kevin Martinez. I am the man in the middle. We are signing out here. We're going to transition over into tea time, not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. So stick around. Thank you for watching. Joey, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having
Peace
me, brother.
Peace out.
That was fun.
That was quick. All right. I know what you're thinking. Kev, seriously? Another ad? Are you serious, bro? But listen. If you're enjoying this conversation, you really want to listen to this ad, okay? Listen, I got good news for you. We have exclusive bonus content strictly on YouTube after this podcast with the same guests, right? Check this out. And this segment is called Tea Time, right? Now, Tea Time is not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. So that's right. Do yourself a favor. Go out there, buy yourself an Arizona Iced Tea, and join us strictly on YouTube for extra bonus content on Tea Time. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you there. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.